Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 1:30 session of the Colorado Court of Appeals, and specifically welcome to Division One. We have two cases on our 1:30 docket, Dish Network versus Altamari and Camp Bird versus Board of County Commissioners. Has everyone checked in for both those cases? Seeing yes. And our counsel seated on the Dish Network case, and we had a confusion in our last oral argument. I imagine that everyone is relatively familiar with our procedures, but let me briefly review them with all of you. Obviously, you have 15 minutes each side to argue. The time is yours to do with as you please. You are the masters of your own time. We do have a light system. There are three lights before you. The yellow light will signal when you have 5 minutes left. When the red light goes off, your time is up. The appellant need not tell me that they want to reserve rebuttal time. Watch your own time, and you can say, I'd like to reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. That would be fine. Please do be advised that all of the judges here on the panel have read all of the briefs. At least one of the judges has read the record, so we have a pretty good handle on the facts. Although, again, the time is yours, you might be well served to get right to the points, arguments that you would like to make. Lastly, if I can ask everyone in the room to please make sure you have pagers and cell phones turned off, although we all would be delighted to hear a ringtone of Ina Klein and Ock music, and Judge Roy may dance to that. It would be distracting to everybody, and so if you could please turn those off. With that, we're ready to proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Barkley, and I am appearing today on behalf of the appellants, Dish Network Corporation and Dish Network LLC. And during the argument, I'll refer to the two appellants as Dish. Your Honors, this is an interlocutory appeal of a district court's denial of Dish's motion for a preliminary injunction against the appellee, Christopher M. Altamari. The injunction motion sought to enforce covenants not to compete contained in incentive stock option agreements entered into by Altamari. Altamari agreed that he would not work for any of Dish's five principal competitors, including DirecTV, for 1 year after leaving Dish's employment. The appeal arises from the district court's determination that the covenants not to compete were void, and that determination turned on the court's interpretation of Colorado Revised Statute 8-2-113(2). That provision invalidates covenants not to compete generally, but then creates four exceptions, two of which are at issue in this case. The first exception is for executive and management personnel set out in subsection D. Now, in this case, Your Honors, the court found that Altamari was a manager. The court could not reasonably have found otherwise, as Altamari himself testified that he was a manager and that he had represented to DirecTV that he was both a manager and an executive. These admissions, Dish submits, should have ended the matter. A manager is, by definition, within the term management personnel. Therefore, there was no dispute that Altamari fell within the exception for executive and management personnel.
Mr. Barkley, does the statute cover any manager? I mean, you sound like, I mean, someone says they're a manager. I think you would agree with me the title is not dispositive, or do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, and in fact, in this case, Mr. Altamari was not, his title was not manager, it was director. So the title is not dispositive, but what is dispositive is, of course, the authority that he had, the supervision that he exercised, and the autonomy he enjoyed. But what's interesting here is that nobody disputes that he fell within that category. He characterized himself as a manager. The court found that he was a manager. And so therefore, there was no real dispute as to whether or not he fell within the phrase management personnel.
Well, they do say that manager requires something more, that, you know, that there has to be, I mean, they of course use key man or key employee or language like that, which I know you disagree with. Maybe I should ask you, how do you define manager?
Well, Your Honor, we do define manager in the in our brief, and the proper definition of manager is the ordinary meaning of the word, and I think in our brief we actually used Webster's Dictionary, which defines manager as one who directs, controls, governs, administers, or oversees business operations or part of a business operation.
Well, if you supervise one person, I have, you know, in my practice, a paralegal under me, does that make me a manager?
A manager of that paralegal? It depends on what other, I don't think super, we have not taken the position, although in the answer brief, they sort of set up a straw man of, as our position being that supervision was the sole and only criteria. That's not our position. It would also depend on the autonomy you enjoy, the authority you exercise. But the other point I think that's important here, Your Honor, is that we don't have to decide the nuances of this, because in this case, there's no question. He supervised somewhere between 50 and 69 people. It's not me supervising my secretary. The authority that he enjoyed, he controlled and directed a department that had a $10 million budget and serviced half a million customers. This is not one of those cases of where you have to sort of get into the niceties of exactly what did he do or what didn't he do. This is a case which is pretty clear cut. And the reason it's clear cut, in part, is by Altomare's own admission that he was a manager.
Well, let's not play on semantics. How many levels of management are there at Dish Network? I mean, were there people below him that you would consider managers? Or was he the bottom of the...
Your Honor, I mean, what he described himself as and what he was described by the court as was a mid-level manager. So presumably, there could have been a layer of management below him, as well as three layers of management above him. But essentially, again, I'm not here to try and define the universe of managers within Dish. What I'm here is to address whether or not Mr. Altomare fell within that category, and there's no question
that
he did.
The trial court found he did.
Pardon?
The trial court found he did.
Yes.
And the only question remaining is whether, from it seems to me your point of view, is whether it takes more than, quote, being a manager, unquote. It takes being the kingpin, being the center of power, being the, I don't know, what these all these other terms are that are used in the cases.
Absolutely.
Whether that's required, and that's what the trial court seemed to say. Just this, sure. This guy's a run-of-the-mill manager.
Okay?
Sure. It doesn't cover him.
Okay, and let me tell you why I think the trial court was in error there. There are essentially two reasons. The first is a statutory construction argument, and the second is her reliance on policy to essentially modify the language of the statute. Let me start with the statutory construction one. One of the first rules of statutory construction is that you interpret a term in accordance with its ordinary and common meaning. The ordinary and common meaning does not mean a manager who is at such a high level that they actually are the person who exercises sort of the sole and exclusive control. In our case, for example, perhaps Mr. Egan would be, by that definition, the only person who is a manager. But that's not the ordinary and common meaning of the word manager or management personnel, and the court should have applied the ordinary meaning. The ordinary meaning is someone who conducts supervises or directs a business or part of a business, and it clearly falls within that.
Their argument seems to be that this court, in a series of cases, have narrowed that definition in some fashion and made it more than just somebody who is a manager.
I understand that, Your Honor, and let me make one more point about the statutory interpretation, is that if you look at, if you accept the definition of manager, executive and management personnel that they apply, it essentially reads the phrase management personnel completely out of the statute, because everybody who would meet that criteria would be an executive, and therefore there would be no need for the management personnel exception.
Mr. Barkley,
I'm sorry, yes, sir.
In your argument, you're suggesting that the definition of management personnel is a legal question, but as you know, there are many cases in interpreting the statute that said whether some that says that whether someone is a manager is a question of fact. So how do you mesh those two concepts?
Because, Your Honor, what the trial court did was make a factual finding that he was a manager. The court then made an interpretation of the statute as requiring something more than a manager. And what we are attacking is the court's sort of layer of an additional requirement based upon her understanding of policy to require more than what the the ordinary meaning of the terms, that phrase was a little awkward, but more than the meaning of that phrase. And so that is a legal question as to whether or not she properly interpreted the statute. Let me also say that, and I know that there is an issue as to the standard of review, that an abuse of discretion standard also, an abuse of discretion occurs when a court applies an erroneous standard. So under that circumstance, I'm not sure there's a difference as to whether it's de novo or abuse of discretion.
Mr. Barkley, if yes. I could ask you one more question. Yes. I know you're looking at the yellow light, but I do want to ask you this from just a very practical standpoint. In your opening brief, you asked for an injunction until July 10th of 2008. I assume you mean 2009. If we were to agree with your position under the non-compete statute, what relief do you practically expect would be afforded given the proximity of July 10th?
There are sort of that encompasses two reasons why we're here. One is, of course, that an injunction until July 10th would be one of the remedy that we would be asking from you. The second is that this is only one of more than there is at least one other case, not case, but one other situation in which an employee has been hired at the same level and has been hired away. So what we need is an interpretation that will allow us to understand whether or not our covenant are valid, and if they are, whether or not we have the ability to enforce them. So this is also kind of one of the capable of repetition but evading review issues.
So you're suggesting that the case is either moot or close to being moot?
No, I don't think it would be moot because of the capable of repetition analysis. Right.
So you're saying it would come under the exception to mootness?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that
unless we get the opinion announced before July 10th.
That would be great.
I just want to clarify your position on
that. Yeah, no, my understanding is that there is a case by this court that basically says you can't sort of tack on at the end the part that you haven't been able to enforce. And so we are not suggesting that we would be able to extend it for a year from the date of enforcement.
Mr. Brock, it looks like you want to save time for rebuttal. Just one last quick question. Would you agree with me that the purpose for this managerial exception, the management personnel, is really a concern about protecting folks who might have strategic plan information, business information? Isn't that why we have that exception?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, Your Honor, but I think there are other reasons. Certainly, there is this person is going to be exposed to highly important strategic information and other kinds of trade secrets, and that certainly is an issue here. But I also think that Part of it is that these are highly compensated employees who are in better bargaining positions. For example, in this case, it was part of a stock option agreement that Mr. Altamirano was not required to sign, and it was his choice to accept the stock option agreement with the covenant. So I think it's also because these are people who are in stronger bargaining positions and therefore are able to negotiate deals that are separate from the run of the mill.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is David Hammond, and I'm here to represent Christopher Altamirano. I'd like to make three points with regard to the executive and management exception position here. Number one, that the trial court properly construed and applied the non-compete statutes by following the case law's guidelines. Number two, ruling the way that DISH has asked this court to rule would have consequences not only for the case law and the guidelines that have been set out previously, but also it would have a far-reaching impact in terms of the mobility of employees within a particular industry and the ability of competitors within a particular industry to hire people to staff their positions.
Isn't that the very purpose? Isn't that the very purpose of the exception, is to permit businesses to protect this kind? I mean, you're saying that this is going to destroy mobility, but that's exactly what it's designed to do.
Well, Your Honor, a balance.
I mean, Mr. Altamirano can go work for all but five employers in the country, as I read the agreement. Now, that's not very restrictive. He can quit and go work somewhere.
Your Honor, is the several points. Number one, as the record below indicated, when you count those five entities, which is the other major DISH direct broadcast satellite company and the major cable companies, for this business, because of the scale involved, you have ticked off all the possible employers for Mr. Altamirano. That was his testimony at the preliminary injunction.
His management skills aren't in any way transferable. His ability to supervise people and manage budgets is in no way transferable to another industry. And if it's not, isn't it in fact his inside knowledge of DISH Network that he's trading on?
Certainly Mr. Altamirano has experience and has management ability, which he can take to other industries, but people are, we then come against the next consideration, Your Honor, which is that Colorado is an at-will state, a state that believes that employment and the ability to move from an employer is actually a two-way street. Although we frequently in employment cases talk about it from a pro-management standpoint, it goes the other direction as well. At-will employment means that an employee can leave. And what we're doing here is significantly hindering Mr. Altamirano's and other people's ability to move within the industry.
The covenant not compete was not a condition of his employment, was it?
That's correct. It was part of
a condition of an additional benefit, which is required, that is an additional consideration for this covenant. He signed it.
That's right, Your Honor, but merely because he signed a stock option agreement does not transform what would otherwise be an unenforceable non-compete situation into an enforceable one. In other words, the fact that he had a stock option didn't make him any more susceptible to a non-compete than if he had not signed the agreement. The basic facts that he's not a manager of the level required by this court's prior cases would still exist.
I'm not responding to that. I'm responding to your parade of horribles argument that you started with, which was that this destroys his career if he can't move, which I don't think is true.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, Your Honor, the best I can answer that is the preliminary injunction hearing evidence was that he would not be able to work within this industry, given the terms of the preliminary, given the terms of the non-compete. Mm-hmm. Let me add, because there are many components of your comments that I'd like to respond to, and one was with regard to the protection of DISH and DISH-type information, and I'd like to speak directly to that. Again, this is part of the balance that's being struck in Colorado between the at-will doctrine encouraging the movement of employees and the non-compete statute recognizing the value of competition for employees. And the courts, in looking at, well, how do we analyze management personnel? What type of magnifying glass do we look to that? Have come up with a standard. Now, there are no cases that have been cited, and there are no cases that exist that say you use a broad scope to understand what executive and management personnel. So you sweep everyone, no matter how many layers of management above them, into that exception. Now, what DISH does in their opening brief, Your Honor, is refer to a case, the Beeson case, at page 26, and I draw that to your attention to show the contrast we have here. That's an insurance coverage case, and at page 407 of that case, the language says that provisions must be understood in their most inclusive sense for the benefit of the insured. So in that insurance context, the decision was, we're going to look at managers very broadly. On the other hand, the decisions of the courts have consistently said, when we're looking at management in terms of understanding how to apply this exception, we're going to construe it very narrowly.
Mr. Hammond, let me ask you about that. I'm not aware of any Colorado appellate case that has actually done a statutory construction analysis of the term executive and management personnel. Are you?
Have they said what does executive and management mean?
Yes.
I'm put exactly that way, no, Your Honor, but I am aware that there's been very definitive. I take that back, actually, Your Honor, and I would refer to the Phoenix Capital case. Because in the Phoenix Capital case, what is a manager is examined for purposes of the statute at page 842. And they're referring to some commentators in their language of key executive and very heart of the enterprise. The court says, in essence, yes, that is the concept for executive and management personnel, which we embrace.
But the phrase key executive or important management personnel are not terms in the statute. Those are terms from earlier cases, are they not?
That's a term, Your Honor, which first appeared, as I understand it, in the Harrison versus Albright case. But that terminology, Your Honor, didn't just appear. It's wholly consistent with the directives of this court that the definition, that the exceptions, all exceptions, are to be narrowly construed.
Well, it's one thing, counsel, to say that you construe the exceptions narrowly. It's a different thing to say, as I think you argue, that management personnel means the key employee or the heart of the business. I mean, in the Harrison case, it was just a comment on it was a plumbing business, as I recall, where one partner knew nothing about plumbing and the other one did, and said, he's the key guy here. And I think it's a pretty big stretch to go from that to say management personnel means it has to be the key employee. I have problems with your argument. I want you to respond to this, because you seem to define it so narrowly that I think Mr. Ergen is the only guy who would apply in the exception. So I'd like you to respond to that.
And I'd like to, Your Honor. First, again, I'd refer to the Phoenix Capital case, because in the Phoenix Capital case, they're not talking about, like Harrison. Mr. Albright in the Harrison case, as you said, was in fact the key man. But in the context of the Phoenix Capital case, what they do first, without even talking about the characteristics of the individual, is say, what kind of standard are we looking for here? And that's in that context that they use key executive and they use very heart of the enterprise. And then in other cases, Your Honor, like the Reed Mill case and like the Atmel case, where the words "in charge" appear, those aren't descriptive of the particular individual. In fact, in both Atmel and Reed Mill, the person doesn't fall within the management exception. So the "in charge," which is just another way I'd submit, Your Honor, of saying key executive or very heart of the business, that standard appears again and again. So in different ways, from different directions, this concept of somebody who is really integral to running the overall business appears again and again, and we're not limited just to the facts of the peculiar facts of the Harrison versus Albright case.
Well, perhaps, and maybe you could tell, what does "in charge" mean? I mean, at Dish, there's one guy in charge. Maybe you can help me with that.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor, but what I would say is that it certainly doesn't reach in a company where you've got the CEO, you've got executive vice presidents, you've got senior vice presidents, you've got vice presidents, and then Mr. Altomare at the director level. Wherever that line is drawn within this particular company, it doesn't reach the director. But it would arguably reach the executive vice presidents and perhaps the senior vice presidents, because like the senior vice president in DoubleClick, they are in charge of a significant portion of the business, which contrasts with Mr. Altomare's situation.
Mr. Hammond, if that's so, what you're describing are people who are executive personnel. So how would that extend, if considering Dish Network, who, for example, would be management personnel who are not executive personnel? Because I assume that you would agree that there are two separate categories. Or do you think that they're one and the same?
I'm sure, I'm not aware, Your Honor, of a case which attempts to say these are executives, these are management.
But what do you think that the General Assembly intended that there would be some people who are executive personnel and other people who are management personnel, or that the General Assembly had in mind that it's one category, executive and management personnel, that people, if you're one, then you're the other?
The best answer I can give, Your Honor, is that the criteria I have articulated have been consistently applied to that whole phrase, executive and management personnel. So the same in, I'm sorry,
go ahead and finish your
So thing. The same in charge criteria, for example, based upon the prior decisions, would apply to management personnel.
Well, the reason I'm asking the question is because I think there's a real difference between a situation where you're dealing with a small plumbing company and saying that somebody is in charge on the one hand, and dealing with Dish Network when it has thousands of employees on the other, and as Judge Gabriel was suggesting, it may be more difficult to determine who is in charge at a very large company like Dish.
Right, and Your Honor, and that's why, for example, in the DoubleClick case, instead of limiting it to the CEO of DoubleClick, which according to the case description is a very large international corporation, a senior vice president who is herself not at the very top was still considered to be in charge of a significant portion of that corporation. And in the Phoenix Capital case, the wording "key executive" and "very heart of the enterprise" clearly indicate that we're not limited to just one individual who falls within a category.
Am I understanding correctly from your answer to a question a few minutes ago that your view is executive and management personnel is one phrase, so that it has to be that you would not separate out people who are management personnel from people who are executive personnel?
What I would say is the courts have used the same criteria for that entire phrase, and that would relate to both executives and to management personnel within that group. There's not been a differentiation by the courts between those terms.
Well, just in your experience, would you say executives of a company are the same as managers, or are they two different groups of people?
For this purpose, management personnel includes people fitting the same criteria as executives.
Well, I'm just trying to determine from your position whether you think there's anybody other than someone who is an executive vice president who could be management personnel or executive and management personnel?
The criteria of the cases so far which define that whole phrase do not provide for a lesser standard. There are no cases that say, but if you're management personnel, we're not looking for as much as if you're an executive. There are no cases that say in charge, key executive, very heart of the enterprise applies only to executives and something less for management personnel. There's no indication that there's a lesser or double tier standard implied or required or mandated.
Well, just one last question. The Dish Network, I think in its reply brief, referred to another statute where the General Assembly used a phrase like something like key executive or key management personnel. So how is, if your definition or interpretation of the phrase is correct here, then how does that square with the General Assembly's use of the phrase key executive personnel?
If I understand, may I just first of all see if I understand your question correctly. If I understand your question correctly, why can't we just borrow key executive or management personnel from another statute and say, well, it worked in that statute, why don't we import it into this case?
Well, that's not exactly my question. Let me try and rephrase it. If the General Assembly had wanted to restrict the term executive and management personnel in the non-compete statute, as you're suggesting, why wouldn't it have used the phrase key executive and management personnel?
Why wouldn't it have added the word key?
Yes.
Is that the question? Well, I'm not sure that I can say why the legislature did what it did, but what I can say is that it's a standard rule of statutory construction that we look to the history of judicial construction, and the history of judicial construction is that the construction is very narrow, and that the words key and in charge have been deemed by the judiciary to be appropriate to understand what executive and management personnel meant, and it was entirely appropriate for the trial court to read those opinions and say, that's what I should be doing.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond.
Thank you.
Mr. Barkley? Got a minute and 40 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address Judge Taubman's question. Your Honor, the way the statute was drafted is that it has the abrogation or invalidation of covenants not to compete and then creates an exception, and that's why it talks about executive and management. If it were not an, the exception is so for both categories, and therefore the statute should be read as having two separate categories. I want to talk very briefly about the meaning of the word narrow. It's true that exceptions are generally interpreted narrowly, but what that means is that you make sure that the characteristic falls within the category. It doesn't mean you rewrite the entire statute to exclude things that are normally falling within it. Secondly, the narrow construction standard applies only when there's an ambiguity, and it's our position that the phrase executive and management personnel is not ambiguous. Let me mention very quickly a couple of the cases.
Aren't both of those terms equally confusing? I mean, does executive add anything to the analysis versus management?
Oh, I think so, Your Honor. I think that an executive is much different than than somebody in management. Executive is the head of the corporation, the vice president, the senior vice presidents, but below that are the managers who are in charge of departments, and so they are actually quite distinct. I mean, I think just sort of common sense is that, you know, an executive is not necessarily a manager and vice versa.
Mr. Barkley, your time's up, but we did give Mr. Hammond about another minute. You said you wanted to point us to a couple of cases. Just give us the names and then.
Oh, well, I wanted to mention that, if I can, very briefly, that in the Atmel case, the court found that there were three levels of management employees above this person, and that was why they found that this person was not management. Also in DoubleClick, there were three levels of management above that employee as well, and she was found to be a manager. In fact, the parallel between DoubleClick and our case is remarkable, so I would request that you take a look at that statute.
Thank you, Mr. Barkley.
Thank you, Your Honor, for listening.
We thank all counsel for your excellent briefs and your oral presentations today. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.